Hi, good afternoon. My name is Ansoon Choi, and I'm an assistant professor at California State University of the Native Hills, and I'm also affiliated with the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. And I've been working on a project about older adults and caregivers and a consumer-directed model of care, but specifically a project that is rooted in publicly financed programs in the state of California, which is called IHSS, In-Home Support Services. And this is a quick description of the study. It's called the Home Study, Helping Older Adults Maintain Independence. Our project drew on a sample of qualitative interviews from a study of California older adults who qualify for publicly financed in-home support services. And this paper presentation examines the relationship between older adults and non-family paid caregivers. Data was collected over a one-year period on older adults aged 65 and over who are consumers of public programs that provide long-term in-care services and supports. In-depth face-to-face interviews were conducted with the older adult and the paid caregiver. Data was independently coded by at least two researchers, and interviews were conducted both in Spanish and English. And this is a study that was supported by the SCAN Foundation in Southern California. These were the demographics of our qualitative study. The mean age was 75. The total number, particularly of care recipients, was 33. 78% were female. And you can see the racial breakdown of 46% were white, 30 Latino, 12 African American, 3 American Indian, and 3 Chinese, and 3 Filipino. And these are the levels of assessed need as the state of California groups older adults who collect IHSS, 1 being low, 2 moderate, 3 high. And the number of years that the percentage and number of years that people were receiving IHS care, and then the level of education for the consumers. What I found in the study that I conducted on the data, there were 3 identified models of non-related caregiver relationships, and in particular, a clear employer-employee relationship, a relationship framed in the language of familial ties, and a mix of the two. So a mix of employer, employee, and familial ties. And so these are the preliminary findings of the study. We found that for these older adults as consumers, securing non-family caregivers through publicly financed programs was a difficult process for consumers. Consumers were responsible for contacting a registry of potential in-home support service workers, and the consumers themselves had to set up interviews and interview potential caretakers, and a lot of consumers found this daunting, particularly if the need for care was brought on by a sudden acute health crisis. If the caregiving relationship involved non-physical care, such as cooking meals, cleaning, running errands, etc., the relationship followed an employer-employee model. The more hands-on intimate care that a caregiver provided, such as bathing and toileting, the more likely the relationship was framed within the context of familial ties. And if caregivers were female and foreign-born, there was also a greater likelihood of the relationship being framed in familial ties. One example is that a consumer who had a very high level of need, who was on a ventilator, who was a quadriplegic, but interestingly rated her health as very good, routinely referred to her caretaker. She had 2. She said, they were like daughters to me, and even referred to them. She's like my daughter, or would sometimes even slip and say, my daughter so-and-so. So I found this really interesting. And then the part of the thing that I'm so interested in the context of familial ties is that once upon a time, very long ago, when I sat in a sociology of the family class as an undergraduate, the first thing my professor told me was that the family is the most dysfunctional unit in American society. And so this stuck with me for a very long time, and it's led to some really interesting research. Consumer satisfaction was the greatest when there was a mix of employer, employee, and the familial tie model. In strict employer-employee models, consumers often noted that their caregivers were cold or unfriendly. And we have to keep in mind that this care is occurring within the home. There's a lack of a clear delineation of, you know, workspace and personal space. There were exceptions to this. When the consumers were in fairly good health, they actually desired the employer-employee model because it felt less like an impingement on their independence. So this was important. For consumers who had high levels of need, particularly hands-on care, a mix of these two models yielded the greatest satisfaction since familial discourse was used to counter the negative aspects of dependency, while the employer-employee model was used to assert the consumer's independence, so a mix of the two. For caregivers, this was also the preferred model, the mix of the two, since it not only recognized the caregiving as formal work, which oftentimes caregiving work, especially done by women and minority women in the U.S., is not seen as work, but as something that is natural, something that is that these women are predisposed to culturally. They are more caring. And this follows a lot of the arguments that are made in the caregiving literature. But for caregivers, it also placed value on the personal relationship between the caregiver and the consumer, which was important. The higher the level of need, the greater the likelihood that the relationship would be characterized along familial ties. A relationship that was dominated solely by this model oftentimes became very problematic very problematic for both the caregiver and the consumers. Consumers often felt that once this pattern was established, it was difficult to provide direction as an employer. So once you start using the discourse of the family, you treat someone like a family member, it's hard to switch back to being an employer. And one thing that this study revealed is, for example, your caregiver coming in on time. When there was a clear notion of the consumer as an employer, caregivers routinely showed up on time. When there was a greater sense of it as a familial relationship, and I'm sure that people are aware, family members don't tend to always be on time for events and appointments and so on. And so a lot of older consumers found that the care that they had was oftentimes jeopardized by this model. When it was largely the familial tie model, many consumers felt that their care was left to what one consumer called the whim of the caregiver. And because in California, at any rate, IHSS workers make a very low hourly wage, so this means oftentimes they work for multiple clients and also work in other capacities, that they are very pressed for time. And then this familial tie model sometimes gives these caregivers more latitude than they would in a traditional employer-employee workplace model. So another thing, caregivers were often troubled by the paternalism that accompanied such relationships. Oftentimes, consumers, when the model was the familial tie model, felt free to give all sorts of unwarranted and unwanted advice to the caregivers. In one case, one caregiver felt deeply offended that the consumer routinely gave her clothing and food, and particularly about the clothing. She's like, the clothing wasn't even in good shape enough to take to Goodwill. but she would give it to her employer, her employee. And this model of paternalism really oftentimes became a source of tension. And also for caregivers that were foreign-born and women and who came from cultural backgrounds that particularly emphasized filial piety toward older adults or filial attitudes toward older adults, this model actually dovetailed with that and also made it very difficult for caregivers themselves to question or to demand better working conditions or any number of things that prevented them from exerting their rights as workers, too. So this became an ongoing problem. And in particular, oftentimes in this familial model, caregivers often felt provided to give care without adequate compensation. So for a lot of people with a high level of need, they have unmet needs, and they would call their caregivers in off hours and times they were not working because they had no one else to turn to, particularly older adults who were relying on non-family caregivers meant that they did not have immediate family in the area. And so in an emergency, in a crisis, and the caregiver, despite their own family obligations and other issues, would feel obligated to provide care without being adequately compensated. So in a larger discussion, very quickly, customer or consumer satisfaction was the greatest when they're the mix of the two types of familial ties and employer-employee care. Consumer-directed care is central to the feeling of autonomy and independence for older adults. Case studies of caregiving suggest there's a high level of unmet need that is oftentimes provided by caregivers without adequate compensation. The network of home and community-based services is fragile for low-income older adults. The caregiving and care-receiving relationship needs to be examined beyond a burden model, and further research is needed to understand the nature of non-familial caregiving models. So that's 12 minutes. So thank you very much for your attention. We don't have the demographics of the caregivers. We found that a lot, it's incomplete is what it is, and we found that a lot of the caregivers themselves were not willing to fill out the demographic information. Mm-hmm. We don't know the reasons why exactly, but we speculate that perhaps they might be unauthorized to work in the U.S. That was one reason. And the other thing is that, and we also didn't require it. We asked about it, and then a significant number declined. So we have incomplete data on that. But we do know that the majority are foreign-born.
And who hires them? The family hires them directly?
They're placed on a registry through the state. And things may have changed in the last year because starting last year, I think December, they require now e-verify and fingerprinting for the IHSS registry. And so the consumer themselves have to get access to the registry and then hire individuals. So they contact the registry. They say, you know, I need a person to come and do this and this and this. And another one of my colleagues looking at the study is looking at how difficult that obstacle is if you don't have sort of a thick network of social support to help you through that process of that bureaucracy to hire someone.
So. Do you have any explanation why they felt that the care was at the whim of the caregiver and why caregivers felt that they were giving free care if they worked for an agency?
Yes. Well, they were.
Because they should have a care plan.
Yes. Yes, they were. They do have a care plan. They do work for an agency. But oftentimes, if the relationship became couched in this discourse of familial ties, oftentimes that because consumers who did not have family members and depended on non-family care that they hired through IHSS, they would have very few options to turn to. So if, for example, we had one consumer, when she was discharged from the emergency room, there was no one to pick her up. She called her caregiver at 3 a.m. in the morning to be picked up, and her caregiver came. This was not part of her job duty, but, you know, and even the caregiver said, you know, and she's like, you know, my mother passed away, and she's like a mother to me. And so oftentimes, caregivers would do all sorts of work that they were not compensated for because of the sort of intersection of homeland culture and filial piety, and also that it was very hard for the caregivers to be so intimately involved with the people that they take care of and to be able to just shut it off as in, okay, well, I've punched out for the day, so I don't have any more obligations. And a lot of these older adults had such high levels of need. We had one case also where the woman was diabetic, yet she could not get out often enough. Sometimes on the weekends, when there was no delivery of Meals on Wheels, she would not be able to get access to food on a regular basis. And so she would call her caregiver, and her caregiver, and she's like, how can I say no when someone needs food? How can I say no? And so the caregivers themselves, the lowest paid individuals in this equation, were often placed in situations where they felt morally they could not say no. And I think it is one of the nuances and the complications of caregiving that we don't think about, especially when it's couched in familial ties and that language. In the employer-employee discourse, if that was the way the relationship worked, caregivers had no problem saying no to the employers. No, I can't run errands for you today. No, I know that your grandchildren are coming for a visit. I can't come and clean your house. I've already done my hours for the week.
And that's a concern that I have because you don't work directly with the caregiver and the care recipient. They work through the state or they work through a home care agency. So communication and coordination has to always go through the agency.
Actually, in the state of California with IHSS, there is no direct supervision except for the hours worked. The consumer has one annual phone call session with a social worker.